We are in a message series here during the summer from the parables of Jesus, the stories that Jesus would tell. He told over 40 parables, parables that had to do with all sorts of things. These stories encourage us, they challenge us. They might sound like a little simple folk tale, but they keep a little something up their sleeve, and then they reach out and sometimes punch you right between the eyes. And the title of today's message is Making Up is Hard to Do, and it's the story of the unmerciful servant. Now, if we're really honest with one another, and we are, forgiveness is one of the most countercultural practices imaginable. By definition, forgiveness is simply what? The unmerited gift to another person. They don't deserve it. They just don't deserve it. And we give it away, meaning we cancel what they owe us and we absorb it. It's painful and we take it and we absorb the pain. Let's be clear. Forgiveness is tough. It's right and good. We all love forgiveness. We love stories about forgiveness. We're inspired by forgiveness as long as somebody else is doing it. Hello. But it is hard. God knows that. Elizabeth O'Connor said these words, "Despite the hundreds of sermons on forgiveness, we do not forgive easily, nor find ourselves easily forgiven. Forgiveness, we discover, is always harder than the sermons make it out to be. We nurse sores. We go to elaborate lengths to rationalize our behavior." One more time. We nurse sores. We go to elaborate lengths to rationalize our behavior. We perpetuate family feuds, punish ourselves, punish others, all to avoid this most unnatural act. Many of us would say, you know, I believe in forgiveness, but, you know, in my situation, you need to know, if you only knew what they said, what they did, what was prevented, what happened, I believe in forgiveness, but, listen, everybody in this room's been wounded. Everybody in this room has been hurt, and not just in trivial ways. And big ways, strong ways. The wounds are real and deep. And we have to, you know, maybe it's not the word forgiveness you use. Graciousness. How gracious will we be? And then, not just the big things. Sometimes it's small things, but they accumulate. Paper cut. You've had paper cut. Paper cuts hurt. You get enough paper cuts, you die by paper cuts. You just bleed to death. Why? And it's just, well, what was the issue? What was the thing? Well, it wasn't one thing. It was just this accumulation over time. And so there it is. And there are very few assignments that are as clear from the life of Jesus and the teaching of Jesus as this assignment to be gracious people, full of grace, to be forgiving people. We are called to be master forgivers, and here's what happens. If you don't do that, yes, something withers in you. Here's what happens. You'll start to hold back. You'll just hold back. You say, you're not going to get much from me. You're not going to get the best of me. You're just not going to get much from me. And people who study forgiveness say, you know, there are so many different dimensions to it. You know, we typically think, well, when we talk about forgiveness, it's all about just forgiving other people. Not always. Sometimes we have to forgive ourselves. How many of you in this room would ever say that you yourself have been your own worst enemy? Raise your hand. That's me. I've been my own worst enemy. And sometimes the most difficult person to forgive is yourself. And I'm constantly looking for somebody to blame, but I dug that hole. You know, maybe you contributed 10%, 20%, whatever, but I got to look at me. And then sometimes we have to forgive, you ready? Life. just life. Our parents always told us life's not fair, but then we get to a certain point and we go, you know, life really isn't fair. And who's to blame? And it's not, and if only things, but there's the ideal, if only, and then there's the real. And life brings you the real, up close and personal. And sometimes you just have to forgive life, the way things are, and yourself. Well, Jesus will talk to us about forgiveness, and everybody, we cannot opt out of this. Here's a forgiveness story by the numbers. Matthew 18, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times. And here Peter thinks he's being quite magnanimous because the rabbi teachers of the day would say that you should forgive three times. And quite honestly, in our culture, it's never really put in print, but here's what you hear in our culture. Fool me once, shame on you. You fool me twice, shame on me. In other words, I'm not even going three times. Jesus, you want us to forgive up to seven times? And Jesus answered, and here is Rabbi Jesus at his absolute best. I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And Jesus is not being literal. He's not saying get out a spreadsheet, download a forgiveness app. Okay, you're at 462 here. He's simply saying what Romans 12 says, as far as it depends on you, seek to be at peace with all. And so, Jesus tells a story. And the first part of the story is about a mega debt. A mega debt. Verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought in. Now stop right there for a moment. You kind of read that and you go, okay, 10,000 bags of gold. No. The people hearing this story would have laughed. This is outrageous. A guy calls in a servant because this servant owes him 10,000 bags of gold. That's like $10.8 billion. And people are laughing. Why? Because the story's absurd. It's outrageous. It's this huge, immeasurable, incalculable debt that's so unrealistic, but it's out there. And what does it symbolize? Our huge, incalculable, unrepayable debt that we owe, which is very realistic, to our God. Well, he owed him 10,000 bags of gold. And verse 25, since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay his debt. Ah, this leads to the second part of the story, mega grace. Mega debt and then mega grace. Here it is. At this time, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. Again, you're sitting there listening to this stoically. The people listening to the story would have laughed. Everybody laughed. Oh, this is great. This is hilarious. Hey, if you'll just be patient with me, I'll pay back the $10.8 billion. Listen, I'm going to mow a couple of extra lawns. I'm going to take a job at Walmart for weekends. I'll work some extra. And I will repay the $10. You're not paying back $10.8 billion. It's not going to happen. But the servant's master, verse 27, took pity on him. Canceled the debt and let him go. Completely gone. No payment plan. Completely forgiven. Free. You're free to go. You no longer owe me. One more time. You no longer owe me. Now, this answers how to forgive. You cancel the debt, you take pity, you take compassion, you cancel, you no longer owe me. But Jesus is now going to continue with the story with why we forgive, and things get really interesting. You've seen a mega debt, you see mega grace, and now you're going to see a mini response to the mega grace. Verse 28. But when the servant went out, the one who'd just been forgiven, $10.8 billion, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. 100 silver coins is about one-third of the annual wage for a day laborer. So in our culture, let's say it's $10,000. And listen, $10,000 is nothing to sneeze at. If somebody gave you $10,000 or ripped you off for $10,000, you'd feel it. It's nothing to sneeze at, but it pales in comparison to $10.8 billion. And so this servant goes out, finds somebody who owes him $10,000, and now the suspense builds. Will this servant, who had received so much mercy and compassion, will he pass it along? Will this servant who had received so much grace distribute it? Will he be big-hearted and large-hearted, or will he be small-hearted? He grabbed him. He began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I'll pay it back. Same thing that the first servant said earlier. But he refused, verse 30. He just refused. Instead, he went off and he had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. And when the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged. They went and told their master everything that had happened. And now you get a mega reaction. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. And here's the key point in the entire story. You ready? Here it is. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? One more time. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? This is the edge. This is the point to the story. And now, verse 34, in anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. Pay back all you owe. And now Jesus closes this with these ominous words. And this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. Whoa. If you read that and you don't go, whoa, you didn't hear it. This is Jesus saying, this is not a little periphery issue. This is not a tertiary matter here. What would the Apostle John say? How can you tell me you love God when you hate your brothers and sisters you see? You can't say, oh, I've got a wonderful relationship with God over here in my private prayer closet. The primary way you show love to God is by loving the very people who mean so much to him. All right, so what's the punchline to the story? Here it is. Forgiven people forgive. They just do. Forgiven people forgive. So I'm down at the gym the other day, where I go regularly, as you can obviously tell. And so I'm down at the gym the other day, and I'm walking along, and I'm chatting with somebody, with a guy, and I guess we're pretty loud, and we're kind of laughing, we're talking a bit, and another guy comes by, and he looks at me, and he says, okay, where are you from? I said, well, I'm from right here. I'm from Sugar Land. No, really. Where are you from? I said, I'm right here, Sugar Land. I've lived in Sugar Land 34 years. He said, you're not from Sugar Land. I hear it in your voice. I hear like Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, you know, something sophisticated like that in your voice. I said, yeah, that's right. I'm from Tennessee, from the Nashville area. But I've lived here 34 years, but I can hear the accent. Listen, graciousness is the accent of the people of God. It's a telltale sign where we're from, to whom we belong. Graciousness is a telltale sign, and it is a trademark of God's people. And if ever it stands out like a star in a dark night, it does in our day today. Forgiven people forgive. They lean into, as a default, graciousness. We've been forgiven an enormous debt, $10.8 billion. And whatever someone does in offending me, in comparison, it is much smaller. And maybe you find that hard to hear, but that's the point of what Jesus is saying. And listen, and Jesus has earned the right to say that. In other words, developing a forgiving spirit in me begins by understanding that whatever room I walk in, the biggest debt in the room is mine. It's mine. To God. Any room, the biggest debt there is mine. Now, here's a question. It's not a trick question. Why do you think the Bible repeatedly emphasizes that Christian people should lean into graciousness and we forgive one another? Answer? Because we're going to sin against one another. We're going to bump up against one another. We're going to have misunderstandings. And it's going to happen among some of the best people you will ever know. Whenever somebody comes on our church staff, one of the things I usually try to tell them is, listen, you need to understand that over the years, you will at times see the worst side of some of the best people you'll ever meet in your life. And you need to have, and every person who's a Christian's got to have a no flinch policy. No flinch. In other words, I'm not shocked that you don't walk on water. Not a single one of us walks on water. Not a one. I don't. You don't. And so you got to have a no flinch philosophy where you go, oh, I'm shocked and appalled. No. We regularly will need to have conversations with one another, apologize, be tolerant, be forgiving, be gracious, and find a way, Jesus says, find a way out of the acrimony, find a way out of the need to retaliate, because that leads nowhere. And you know what? And this is especially true. The longer you live somewhere and the longer you're around a group of people. You know, if I'm just around you for a week, we can be on one another's best behavior for a week. But when you're around a group of people for a long period of time, you're going to have to be especially gracious. I've used this analogy many, many times. You know, what would an accurate description of Ronnie Norman B. What would an accurate description of my physical appearance be like? Somebody says, well, you know, what does he look like? I've heard him on the internet. What does he look like? Well, he's about 5'9", 5'10". He weighs about 150 pounds. He's got long hair, long, really, really dark hair, and it comes down over his ears, and age-wise, he looks to be about 17 years old. You guys, he's a really young-looking person. Is that an accurate description of me? Answer, yes. in 1975. That's an accurate description of me in 1975. 1975, there I am. I'm 5'9", 5'10". I weigh 150. I've got long, dark hair. And I look to be 17 years old because I am 17 years old. Guess what? This is not 1975. It's 2019. I don't look 17. I look older than 17. I'm 61. I no longer weigh 150 pounds. I'm up to about 153, 154, along in there these days. You know, that's not me anymore. I'm a little different. Now, this is what some of you do. You look in the mirror, and you've never forgiven yourself. I'm 1975. I'll always be 1998. I'll always be 2012. God gives you permission by the grace of Jesus Christ. Our great God cancels your 10.8 billion in Jesus Christ. And if we're not careful, though, knowing people over a long period of time, that you know what? You'll always be 1999 to me. You'll always be 2004 to me. I remember what happened. You'll always be, you know, June of 2011. What was it Jesus taught us to pray? Father, forgive me of my sins, even as I forgive those who wronged me, or I feel like they did. So, Christ is asking us to give away what we have received. You know, John Piper said that when he was a younger man, his primary temptation was lust. Physical lust, sexual lust, lust to be known, to be recognized as an achiever. He said the older he got, though, his primary temptation was anger. Why? Been on a trail longer time, walked longer, more history, more opportunities for paper cuts along the way. All right. Before we wind it down, what does forgiveness look like? First of all, forgiveness cancels the debt in a relationship. It just cancels the debt. Here are some phrases, here are some pictures that the Bible gives us on forgiveness. It just cancels the debt. You don't owe me anymore. It sends it away. It just says, you go away. You're no longer part of this discussion. And another thing it does, it covers over. What's that well-known Bible statement? Love covers over a multitude of faux pas. Is that what it says? Love covers over a multitude of just slight misunderstanding. No. Love covers over a multitude of sins. And we hear this and we go, but what about? And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Would you be willing to, before you go the but what about, lean into this invitation from Christ? Secondly, forgiveness is an event and a process. An event and a process. Dr. Everett Worthington is a professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. He's written tons on forgiveness. And he says, listen, forgiveness, we like to think, well, it's just a decide to do it. He said, forgiveness is decisional and it's emotional. Decisional, this is where I say, I am not taking revenge against you. I'm not going to do that. And secondly, I'm going to treat you as a person of value. As Jesus would say, I will pray for you and seek to bless you. But that's the decision. And the emotions over time, it's like, I'll have to keep coming back to that decision, and it's three steps forward, two steps backward. What was it Corrie Ten Boom would say in talking about forgiveness? She said, forgiveness, it's like ringing a bell. You put your hands on this rope, and you're ringing it, and and you continue to pull it. But even when you make the decision to do what? To let go. That bell continues to ring for a bit. Why? Because it's got some momentum in that direction. But then it slows and it stops. Thirdly, forgiveness doesn't mean trust is always immediately restored. Trust isn't built or rebuilt in a moment. But forgiveness can restore the possibility of some rebuilt trust. We'll work towards this. Fourthly, forgiveness doesn't excuse. Listen, this happened. It hurt. We need to grieve something that was lost and address that. But we can choose the better way. We have an option. We can cancel the debt. We can send it away. We can cover it over. Fifthly, forgiveness is rooted in the grace and the justice of God. Rooted in the grace of God, and that we understand, you know, 10.8 billion here. Jesus said something one time. He said, whoever's forgiven little loves little. It was a tongue-in-cheek statement, saying nobody's just been forgiven a little. But the person who has convinced themselves, who thinks, I've only been forgiven a little, they just love little. But whoever's forgiven much, whoever senses, you know, I've got the biggest debt in the room, they love much. And when we forgive, we're turning this over to God. We're saying, God, I release this situation. I release this to you. You know, sometimes people will talk about forgiveness as if it's a love matter. It's just a grace matter. It's all about patience. Listen carefully. I believe forgiveness is rooted in faith. Faith. Believing that what Jesus says, but what God says is actually the best way to go, even though it sounds so counterintuitive. It feels so counterintuitive. But I believe that it's the best way to go because he says so, and I believe that he will help me get there. And last of all, forgiveness may be costly, but unforgiveness, it's more costly. It's more costly. You know, no one ever plans to be a bitter person, but we become bitter over time. And when we think, well, I want to lean into being a more gracious person, I know it's hard, and I know you don't think they deserve it. But get this, God thinks you do. He thinks you do. Back to Dr. Worthington for a moment. He was interviewed, and he was asked this question. I thought it was telling. If there is one thing that you would like people to understand about forgiveness, what would it be? If there's one thing you'd like people to understand about forgiveness, what would it be? And here's what he said. I'd like people to know that there are documented physical benefits, mental health benefits, relationship benefits, and spiritual benefits to leaning into graciousness and forgiveness. All right. Before I make just a final comment, I want to invite our worship team to come back up here. I want to invite our elder couples to be making their way down front. And as that is happening, I'd like to remind you that we only have really a short window of time, but it's a fantastic window of time where God invites us in to mimic him in this gracious distribution of forgiveness. Because you do know that when we get to heaven, there'll be no need to forgive. Everybody's perfectly sanctified, holy people. There's no need to forgive there. We have but a short window of time. And it's a beautiful assignment. And when we do that, here's what we're doing. We are representing God in the world, and we are playing a part and the creating of environments and atmospheres where he's free to show up and do his work. All right, everybody. Forgive in the power of God as you've been forgiven, because I don't want you to hold back.